The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, happy 6-9, everybody. Yep, that's right. It's June 9th, which makes it 6-9. All right. Happy Friday, everybody. Let's get into the NBA Finals. Game 3 was on Wednesday night, and the Denver Nuggets took complete control of that game. They ended up getting the win 109-94 and are up on the series 2-1 right now. Game 4 is going to be played tonight in Miami, but you know, the first half, it was a pretty close game overall, but the Denver Nuggets really took control in the second half and just never looked back. And as I said in the last game, you know, Jokic only got a double-double, so maybe he needs a triple-double for them to get the win. Well, in this game, not only did Nikola Jokic get a triple-double, but Jamal Murray also had a triple-double as well. So both of these guys are just continuing their playoff dominance. Jokic actually had the first ever triple-double in NBA Finals history that was 30-plus points, 21-plus rebounds, and 10 assists. He ended up with a stat line of 32 points, 21 rebounds, and 10 assists. So like I said, that's the first time that's ever happened in the NBA Finals history. So that says a lot right there about Jokic. And then Jamal Murray, like I said, he also dropped a triple-double with 34 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists. And these two just continue to dominate. We'll see what happens in Game 4 tonight. You know, like I've continued to say about the Miami Heat is they are very Jekyll and Hyde. And, that's basically how the NBA Finals has gone for them for sure, is that like one game they'll be on, then the next game they're off, then the next game they're on. And so since the last game they were off, they should at least make this a competitive series. But, there's a good shot that this game or that this series is going to be closed out by Sunday. So we'll see where we're at on Monday, but, game 4 is tonight in Miami, and so we'll see if Miami's actually able to show up in tonight's game. Moving on to the week of baseball, we had a lot going on this week. On Monday, Trey Turner finally had his coming out party with the Philadelphia Phillies. He was the big free agent signing for the Phillies in the offseason, and so far it's been a pretty quiet regular season for him. He really hasn't been able to get it going. Well, he finally did on Monday night. He had a four-hit game. Two of those hits ended up being two home runs. And then, of course, their starting pitcher, Aaron Nola, he also had a dominating game. He was throwing a no-hitter through seven innings in this 8-3 win over the Detroit Tigers. Then on Tuesday, as I mentioned in the last episode, Jacob deGrom was moved to the injured list, the 60-day injured list. Well, it turns out he is actually going to be out for the rest of this season, and probably going into next season as well, because he's going to be having the dreaded Tommy John surgery. That usually means you're going to be out at least a year. This is the second time in DeGrom's career he's had this surgery. He's also getting up there in age. So this is just a huge blow to not only the Texas Rangers, but to Jacob deGrom himself. So very sad to see, but that is the sport of baseball. But then also on Tuesday, at the complete opposite end of the spectrum, you know, talking about Jacob deGrom getting up there in years. Well, the Cincinnati Reds, they were actually able to get some seats in those chairs in the stadium, because I've mentioned earlier in the season that the Cincinnati Reds have been having record low attendance at a lot of their games. Well, they were able to get some attendance going this week with them calling up this huge prospect named Ellie De La Cruz. He made his debut on Tuesday in Cincinnati, and he was able to get his first hit as well in that game, and ended up being a really good game for the Reds. Like I said, they actually had issues selling tickets on Tuesday because there were so many people who wanted tickets, so they actually crashed the ticket website for a little bit. to get some asses in those seats. So good for them. And it was also a 9-8 win over the Los Angeles Dodgers. And then the following day, on Wednesday, De La Cruz, he did not stop there. He had a home run and a triple in a huge comeback win over the Dodgers, in which Will Benson would have a walk-off home run, his first home run of the season, against the Dodgers in an 8-6 win. They actually almost swept the Dodgers completely yesterday, but they would actually take the series two games out of the three. But this Ellie De La Cruz character, he looks like he's going to be really good. I mean, not only can he hit it out of the park, but he is fast as hell. He also had a stolen base, I believe, yesterday. So the guy is he's an all around player, and we'll see. And that's good for the Reds, just because, like I said, it's been difficult for them to get asses in those seats this year. And this De La Cruz guy, he's definitely going to help them get some asses in seats, and he definitely looks like he is the future of the league at this point. Then also on Wednesday, talk about a guy who finally had a breakout game with his new team. That would be Juan Soto. He's had a pretty quiet season for the most part with the San Diego Padres. But on Wednesday, he actually ended up having 5 hits with 4 RBI and a 10-3 win over the Seattle Mariners. So that's good for him, because the Padres have been a huge disappointment this season. I mean, they're stacked to the ceiling with talent, and they are behind the freaking Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks are outdoing this team. I mean, the Diamondbacks are still number one in the National League West, but the Padres should have been battling for that position. And right now, the Padres are in fourth place, even behind my crappy-ass Giants. So the Padres not looking good at all so far, but Soto getting those 5 hits on Wednesday definitely helped them get a win. And then yesterday, Jose Ramirez had a huge game for the Cleveland Guardians. His first 3 at-bats ended up going for 3 home runs. It's the first time in his career he's ever had 3 home runs in one game in a 10-3 win for the Guardians against the Boston Red Sox. So as I said, I mentioned on Monday's show that I thought the Cleveland Guardians are a surging team. They've continued to do that throughout this week. All right, now we actually do have a solid UFC fight this week. UFC 289 is going to take place in Vancouver, Canada. We have one of my favorites, Amanda Nunes, 22-5 record versus Irene Aldana, 14-6 record for Amanda Nunes, her bantamweight title belt. This actually was supposed to be part 3 between Nunes and Juliana Pena, who was actually able to take the title away from Nunes last year. And then Nunes was able to get her title back a few months ago. And then we were going to have part 3. But unfortunately, Pena was injured in the process of gearing up for this fight. So they threw in Irene Aldana, who's a pretty good fighter, but I feel like Nunes is easily going to retain her bantamweight title. And then we also have another solid fight in the lightweight men's division between Charles Oliveira, who's got a 33-9 record, versus Benel Dariush, who's got a 22-4-1 record. Both of these guys, they are grappling kings. They, especially Oliveira. That's my favorite thing about this dude, is he's like a snake. He's just like a fucking anaconda who just like gets in there and just is so amazing on the ground. But this Dariush guy, he's right up there too. Oliveira, he's had his ups and downs, but I feel like he's going to come out on top in this one. I think he's going to get the submission. But we'll see. It should be a good fight in both of those matchups over the weekend. Then we also have College Baseball World Series coming up this weekend. So I'm going to go ahead and run through my bracket on who I think is going to ultimately win the College Baseball World Series. Let's name off the national top 16 seeds who were shoo-ins for the College Baseball World Series. Number 1 is Wake Forest. Number 2 is Florida. Number 3 is Arkansas. Number 4 is Clemson. Number 5 is LSU. Number 6 is Vanderbilt. Number 7 is Virginia. Number 8 is Stanford. Number 9 is Miami, the U. Number 10 is Coastal Carolina. Number 11 is Oklahoma State. Number 12 is Kentucky. Number 13 is Auburn. Number 14 is Indiana State. Number 15 is South Carolina. And number 16 is Alabama. Of course, we had other teams who ended up winning in their regional championship brackets. One of them being my Texas Rangers. So Hook'em Horns, Texas Longhorns. Talking about college baseball, not pro baseball, not a Texas Rangers fan, so don't get that twisted. But I am a Texas Longhorns fan, and they are in it because they ended up winning a regional championship last weekend. So Hook'em Horns, motherfucker. I hope they're able to make a nice little run here, but they are in a difficult bracket, and I don't, spoiler alert, I don't have them winning the College Baseball World Series. But let's find out who I do have winning the College Baseball World Series. So let's start off with the Super Regionals this weekend. We have Wake Forest versus Alabama. I have Wake Forest moving on in that one. Then we have my Texas Longhorns versus Stanford. I have, of course, my Longhorns moving on in that bracket. Then we have LSU versus Kentucky. I have LSU moving on in that bracket. And then Southern Miss versus Tennessee. I have Southern Miss moving on in that bracket. Then we have Florida versus South Carolina. I have Florida moving on. And we have Duke versus Virginia. I have Virginia moving on. And then we have Oregon versus Oral Roberts. I have Oral Roberts moving on just because they have the word oral in there. Indiana State versus TCU. I have TCU moving on. So then my Men's College World Series bracket in the first round would be Wake Forest versus my Texas Longhorns. Now, unfortunately, that's where I think the Texas Longhorns are going to fall short, because the Longhorns this season in baseball, they haven't been very consistent. They started off the season pretty hot, but they've been very up and down the rest of the year. I was actually kind of shocked they were able to move on and barely make the College World Series. And so them going up against the number one seeded Wake Forest team, I don't think they're going to get past Wake Forest, so I do have Wake Forest taking out my Texas Longhorns, unfortunately. Then my next pairing would be LSU versus Southern Miss. I have LSU moving on in that matchup. Then Florida versus Virginia. I have Virginia moving on in that matchup. And then Oral Roberts versus TCU. I have Oral Roberts moving on just because they have the word oral in their name. Then in the second round of the College Baseball World Series, my matchup would be Wake Forest versus LSU. I have Wake Forest moving on in that one. And then Virginia versus Oral Roberts. I have Virginia moving on in that matchup. And so my College Baseball World Series championship round would be Wake Forest versus Virginia. And I have Wake Forest moving on just because they are the number one seed for a reason. They've been one of the most dominating teams all season long in college baseball. So I do have Wake Forest moving on, even though I am absolutely 100% rooting on my Texas Longhorns. I'm hoping somehow they're able to get their way in there. I mean, that's why they play the tournament. Anything can happen, but Wake Forest is just that good, and I do think Wake Forest is ultimately going to win the entire College Baseball World Series. So we do have a lot of baseball on tap coming up over this next month. All right, and now let's move on to a segment that I haven't had to do in a couple months so far, but that would be the retarded hysteria of the day topic. And this week's retarded hysteria of the day has actually been going on for almost about a year now. But it's something I've mentioned in passing a couple times, but haven't really gotten into it because, for one, it involves the sport of golf, which I don't give two shits and a fuck about golf. I think golf is boring as hell to watch. It's okay to play. I'm actually, I took lessons as a kid, and I've gone to driving ranges and stuff, so I'm not terrible at golf, but it's just never been anything that's I've given a shit about. So I was never really giving a shit about this topic, but it was hilarious to watch the hypocrisy unfold over the months and over the past year, and now it has finally, quote, come to an end slash beginning, and that would be the PGA has officially joined forces with LIV Golf. Now, let me go ahead and start from the beginning of this if you aren't really aware of what's going on. But basically, LIV Golf, they started about a year ago, And they are a new golf tournament that has basically wanted to rival the PGA. Now, one of the shitty things about being a golfer and being associated with the PGA is that you only get paid if you win a tournament. You pay for your own expenses, you pay for your own travel, and you pay for everything. And the only time you get paid with PGA is if you win the tournament. So, you know, golfers aren't making as much money as you think they would. Now, of course, they chose to do this, but also if a new tournament comes along or a new organization comes along, like LIV did, they actually started poaching golfers from the PGA to sign with them. And the way they did that is they actually started paying the golfers. And what I mean by that is some golfers, I can't remember exactly who made what, but some golfers are getting like $100 million contract offers. And it's just a contract, a straight contract. All you have to do is show up and it doesn't even matter if you win. And if you win, you get those winnings as well. So not only do you get paid to show up, and you get a regular paycheck, if you will, you also get those winnings. And I'm sorry, if I was a golfer and I was getting offered that kind of money, I'm taking that offer too. And so a lot of golfers, pro golfers over the last year have been going and doing this with LIV, but the PGA has been very upset about this. And so they started making all the golfers who stayed with the PGA basically be their mouthpiece and down talking LIV, because like I said, LIV is based out of Saudi Arabia, a horrible country who treats their people like shit. But guess what? We do business with lots of countries like that. And we have throughout the history of time, and not just, you know, our government and our country in general, but like all businesses in this country do business with shitty countries. I mean, for example, those iPhones or any phone, that any smartphone that any of us are using, those contain batteries, which you need this thing called cobalt to get. And cobalt is mined for in Africa and I believe South America, but most notably Africa, and little four-year-olds and eight-year-olds are actually mining for this cobalt, and they die for us to have our stupid little cell phones. And then our cell phones are actually put together, usually in China, another shitty, crappy country who hates people and hates gays and hates any type of religion they don't deem okay for you to practice. And basically, if they don't want you to be your own human being. But we have slaves in China putting together our phones. But I don't see anybody, you know, talking down any of that kind of shit. But boy, howdy, all these PGA supporters over the last year have been just so down talking LIV off of their high horse with their pinkies out. Oh, how dare you do business with Saudi Arabia, the gay haters, the woman haters, and the horrible people of this world who hate basically every religion and every group of people. Yeah, we get it. Saudi Arabia, very horrible country. But guess what? There are so many horrible countries around the world that we deal with, as I just mentioned, that we continue to deal with. Where do you not get gas? Because I don't know if you know this, but our gas comes from Saudi Arabia. So are you not driving a gas-powered car? Oh, and if you're one of those idiots who's like, oh, I drive an electric car, I'm saving the world. No, you're not. That cobalt I was just talking about in your batteries there. So no, you're not saving the world in any way, shape, or form. None of us are saving the world. In America, we thrive off capitalism, whether you like it or not, or if you're one of those capitalist haters, too bad for you. This is just the way it works. And so it's been hilarious to see just the PGA and their golfers. And just even as recently as this weekend, Jack Nicklaus, you know, one of the most world famous golfers of all time, was down talking LIV Golf like 2 days before this went down. And as of this week, the PGA has now officially joined LIV Golf, and they're going to be joining forces and working together. And part of the reason why is because everybody started jumping ship from the PGA, and so nobody was watching any of the PGA events if they didn't involve LIV golfers, because that was a huge point of contention as well. The PGA was trying to, like, ban LIV golfers from some of the, like, all the main events, which just never really happened because everybody wants to see all of those golfers, and PGA only has basically Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy as as a draw, and Tiger Woods is pretty much should be headed towards retirement. He ain't what he used to be, that's for damn sure. And by the way, Tiger Woods was offered near $1 billion to join this LIV Golf. But the thing about Tiger Woods is he only cares about Master, you know, since I don't watch golf, I'm totally spacing on what I'm meaning. But the tournaments that matter the most, like the Masters, that's what matters to Tiger Woods. He's a billionaire. He doesn't really have to care about money. He could choose whether or not he wants to be a part of that or not. But it doesn't matter now because the PGA and LIV are now officially joined up together. As I was saying, though, with PGA, what their problem was is their ratings were starting to suffer, and they were actually starting to lose sponsorships and all of that along the way in route to their high horseness. And it was just so hilarious to see just the rug pulled out from under all these people with their high horse opinion on this. And especially the golfers, because apparently these golfers who have been mouthpieces for the PGA, including Rory McIlroy, who have been just staunchly opposed to LIV Golf, they got the rug pulled out from under them. They didn't even know this was happening, which is hilarious to me because, like I said, I am not a golf fan. I've casually been paying attention to this storyline just due to the hypocrisy, and I find hypocrisy hilarious, and just people who are always on their high horse, no matter what viewpoint they have. If you're on your high horse, I love seeing you get knocked the fuck down. And PGA got knocked the fuck down this week, including these mouthpieces for the PGA. And the golfers didn't find out until this merger happened. And so all those mouthpieces, they basically feel duped because they were sticking up for the PGA, who's, you know, we got your back, and money talks. And of course, the PGA joined forces with LIV. Like I said, I've only been casually paying attention to this, and I knew this was going to happen at some point because that's what sports are all about, making money and being bigger and making more and more money. And the only way the PGA was going to be successful was to join up with LIV, and this is going to be better for the sport of golf. And it was just hilarious to me to just see all of this unfold over the months. And now all the high horse motherfuckers with their pinky out. Oh, how dare you do business with Saudi Arabia, as I scroll through the golf scores on my iPhone that was made by a bunch of horrible people in China. I mean, for real. Do y'all realize that? Like, do you really, like, do research on everything you, like, wear or you own or you eat or just anything in life? You literally don't know where most anything comes from, but chances are the source of wherever anything comes from is a horrible fucking place. I mean, really, if you just think about it, and just Nike uses child slave labor to make all of their gear that we all wear, that Nike sponsors in golf tournaments, in every fucking sport, basically in the world, Nike is involved with. And we know they use child labor, and probably even worse that we don't even know about. But you know what? I'm going to be sporting Nike because they make good product, in my opinion. And also, I'm not stuck on my fucking high horse and think everything that comes from somewhere is from some beautiful source. Nah, it's not. I'm sorry. Y'all need to get over yourselves. And it was hilarious to see all you PGA motherfuckers just get knocked the fuck out from your fucking stupid ass hypocrisy. But the sport of golf will live on, and it was a smart move for them to join up with LIV, because that was the only way they were going to keep it moving. And this is going to be better for the sport of golf. And I know there's some people out there who are like, I'm never going to watch golf again. Yeah, I'm sure you'll be watching the Masters whenever the fuck that's on, or I'm sure you'll be watching whenever the next big major golf tournament is. So get off your high horse. You're like that idiot who's like, oh, if so-and-so is elected as president, I'm going to move. No, you ain't. Your dumb ass going to still be here the day after election day if that person wins or loses. Shut the fuck up, you high horse motherfuckers. That shit was hilarious to me. And that's probably the last time we're going to be discussing golf on this show ever again. Now, let's talk about a real sport and the show with a top five list this week. This week's top five list is it's going to tie into the debut of Ellie De La Cruz, as I was discussing earlier in the show when we were talking about baseball, and his highly anticipated rookie debut, which has gone really well so far. But believe it or not, there's even better rookie debuts that have happened. And so today's top five list is going to be the top five rookie debuts in baseball. So let's begin with number five. It was on September 5th, 1971. Starting pitcher for the Houston Astros, J.R. Richard, threw a complete game against my San Francisco Giants, allowing only two runs, and actually tied a major league record with 17 strikeouts in a win for his debut. Now, I've personally never heard of J.R. Richard. I know that he made his debut in 71, so I imagine he was retired by the time I actually started paying attention to baseball. But that is one hell of a debut, if you ask me, to have a complete game and then also having 17 strikeouts. That's a pretty goddamn good debut, if you ask me. Then at number four, I'm going to drop five rookie debuts in baseball. Happened on June 8th, 2010. I actually remember this debut, and that would be Steven Strasburg, starting pitcher for the Washington Nationals. Now, he actually ended up really missing his first season of baseball due to, I believe it was Tommy John surgery, whatever. He was out pretty much his entire first season. But his debut actually wasn't until the following season in 2010. In which he would have 14 strikeouts among seven innings of baseball and only allowing two runs against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And it was a dominating outing. I mean, he lived up to all the hype. Unfortunately, like I said, his beginning started with an injury, and unfortunately, that's pretty much how his entire career is gone. As a matter of fact, it was announced earlier this week that he has some potential nerve damage. And so we may be looking at the end of Steven Strasburg's career. So it started, it's ending how it started. Now, when he's pitched, he's been dominant. He's had some dominating seasons. He did win a World Series with the Washington Nationals, and he was a huge piece for that playoff run as well. So he has overall had a pretty solid career, but unfortunately, it's just been marred by injuries. But he did have one of the most solid debuts ever, and he lived up to the hype because he was heavily hyped when he was drafted, and he came right out in his first start and had an amazing first start. Then at number three on my top five rookie debuts in baseball, Starlin Castro on May 7th of 2010. He played for the Chicago Cubs, most notably as a shortstop, but he would play second base as well. And this guy had a hell of a debut. He had a home run and a bases-loaded triple in a win over the Cincinnati Reds, and he would actually end up with six RBI, which is the most RBI for any rookie debut in the history of baseball. This motherfucker came out like a lightning rod. This was yet another. What's crazy is this is the same year that Steven Strasburg debuted as well, and both of these guys were basically billed as the future of the league, and they both really were solid players. Now, Starlin Castro, he also suffered through a lot of injuries, so he really didn't have as dominating a career as we thought he was going to, but he came right out the gates and had one of the greatest rookie debuts you will ever have. Then at number two on my top five rookie debuts in baseball, Juan Marichal. On July 19th, 1960, he was a starting pitcher for the San Francisco Giants. This was against the Philadelphia Phillies. He would throw a perfect game through seven innings and have a no-hitter through eight innings. He would eventually get the win in a one-hit shutout with 12 strikeouts and only one walk in his debut. He would go on and have an amazing Hall of Fame career. He's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Hands fucking down. Yes, I know I'm a San Francisco Giants fan, so I'm being a little bit biased. But Juan Marichal, obviously one of the greatest pitchers of all time, and he came right out the gate and showed everybody, yeah, bitch, I'm that dude. But at number one on my top five rookie debuts in baseball, also a San Francisco Giant, on July 30th, 1959, the great Willie McCovey would make his debut outfielder for the San Francisco Giants. He would go 4-for-4 with two triples, two RBI against Philadelphia Phillies Hall of Fame pitcher Robin Roberts. So not only did he have a great stat line, but he also came right out the gate and lit up one of the greatest pitchers at this time in baseball. So Willie McCovey, hands down, so far, nobody's been able to top that rookie debut. Even though Ellie De La Cruz, he did have a great debut, and it looks like he's got a great future. Ain't nothing topping the great Willie McCovey there. So that's this week's Trop 5, the Trop 5 rookie debuts in baseball. And like I said, we have us a jam-packed weekend of sports. We have us some NBA Finals tonight and Sunday. We have a shit ton of Major League Baseball. We also got that College Baseball World Series starting. And we've got UFC on tap. So it is, pick your poison, people. It's going to be a great jam-packed weekend of sports. So I hope you all enjoy it, because I know I will. And I will talk to you fools on Monday.